Phila Mahfouz and Milena Kapoor are the co-authors of Defiant Dreams, the story of how a Stanford student helped tell the story of an Afghan girl's fight for her education and independence. Welcome, Sola and Milena.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Excited to have you both on. Tell us a little bit about your personal lives. I guess it's a lot to unpack because this is an incredible story. So maybe tell us just how you got together.
Milena, do you want to go?
Sure, I can start. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into Sola's amazing story, but Sola and I were first connected actually in the middle of COVID during the pandemic. So we weren't able to meet in person for a long time, but Sola started telling me stories from her life and I started writing them. And that became the basis for this book, Defiant Dreams. And, you know, I think the power of this book is that on one hand, it's Sola's story of how she was able to secretly educate herself and escape Afghanistan. But it's also the story now of millions of girls and women who are in Afghanistan who are being denied an education and who are living lives so similar to the one that we chronicle in the book.
I can remember that was one of the really terrible, there are so many terrible things about the last 20 years with what was going on in Afghanistan from my perspective as an American, but certainly one of the most painful ones for me was learning about how what you just described, how women and girls were no longer going to be able to be to receive an education. So I know that that's certainly that information made its way to a lot of people in the United States. Has any of that changed?
I mean, I think it's important to remember really that what is happening, it's not 20 years. It really goes back to the time of, you know, the resistance that started against the Soviets and that what led to the civil war and then the Taliban. And it really what we see today is really the shadow of, you know, what happened in those times. Defiant Dream is, you know, the story of Afghanistan and also the story of my life over decades. And for example, and it was not like that all the time, of course. You know, my mother, for example, went to school, became a professor at Kabul University, and then the civil war started, and then the Taliban, everything that she had was lost. And then when in 2001, when Taliban were ousted by the US and its allies, the schools were reopened. And, you know, my mother was like, this generation of her kids are not going to be uneducated. And she would often say, do you know how it feels to have a mother who's educated but see her kids raised uneducated? And so, but that came to an abrupt end. When I was 11 years old, I was forced to stop going to school. A group of men came to our door and threatened us if we continue to going to school. And so from that day on, the restriction on my life only continued to increase. And I was allowed to leave home. Like over the years, as I started to grow up, I left home only a couple of times a year. And whenever I did, I had to wear this suffocating burqa that covered me from head to toe. But, you know, meanwhile, it was not the same for the boys. You know, my brothers were going to school and they were like academically thriving and they had purpose in life. And I felt jealous and I had so many questions of why I can't do the same. And so, and it's like, you know, this is like, and then I started learning English then like math and science. And when I was 16, I did not even know how to add and subtract. But then from that on, like using Khan Academy in 2 to 3 years, I was able to go to study college level calculus and physics. And finally, you know, there were many, many obstacles along the way, but I came to the US and now I'm a quantum computing researcher at Tufts University. So I think this, you know, in Defiant Dreams, this, even though it's the, you know, my education story, but it's really a reflection of, you know, what women goes through, even at the time when, you know, the US was still there, when, you know, there was still this perception, like, you know, there are women rights, there's all those things. So if, you know, one person can go through so much for just something really basic in those times, then we cannot even imagine what person can go through now when everything is just dark.
So, I mean, it's terrible. It's just really difficult for me to get my brain around that. And for as a parent, to think about it from your mom's perspective, she was a professor, for goodness sakes, and then all of a sudden she's not. And not only that, but no information to learning or anything like that. And she has to watch her daughter only leave the house occasionally over the course of years. The presence of the Taliban, obviously, it's a group that is so impactful that they stop an entire society from educating women. How many people are we talking about? Are we talking about hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands, thousands?
So there are millions of girls who are being denied an education right now in Afghanistan. And then, of course, there's so many more restrictions on women and girls. I think what's important to think about when we think about what happened in 2021 when the Taliban came back is that initially there were all these discussions, especially in the United States, about this idea that maybe this is a new Taliban, a Taliban 2.0 that is going to be more of a government that wants to integrate with the world order. But as soon as the world's attention turned away, it became clear that this was the same Taliban, a Taliban that banned girls' education after the sixth grade, a Taliban that banned women from going to work or from leaving the home without a male guardian. And what we've seen is in the last 2.5 years, the Taliban has instituted over 75 different edicts that are targeted directly at women and girls. And those are sweeping edicts like the ones banning school, but they're also these very specific bans that really eat away at the identity of women. Things like just a couple of weeks ago, the Taliban banned women from calling into television shows or radio shows. So now women's voices are gone from the airwaves. You know, women over the summer were banned from going to beauty salons, which sounds trivial until you think about the fact that it was the last place in Afghanistan for women to gather, for women to make money, and for women to experience something that would, you know, set them apart, remind them of their individual identities. And that's the really profound restriction that we're continuing to see week after week in the country.
And it's also very interesting is that, you know, even yesterday I was talking to some of my nieces in Afghanistan, and they're telling me that, you know, they still can go to like a madrasa, but yet they can't go to like a school. And it's so like, I was thinking about it. So are they really like against women stepping out of the house or a girl after sixth grade? Or is there like really against the education, like the liberal education that, you know, maybe help them resist them in some ways? So I think that's also really, really like important to really to think, because this generation, they're going to make this, they'll force them to not go to school. But then, yeah, eventually you're going to be accepted as a normal. So they're not going to be like this resistant to this, you know, those ideology that suppress them and oppress them.
So you believe that that is the motivation of these edicts of not allow?
Mm-hmm.
So what was it that changed for you in your situation at age 16? You're not able to add or subtract, but not anymore. Now I'm going to get this information.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was 14, I really, I had like so many questions, like why am I here? Like, what's the meaning of life? What's my purpose? You know, it's like every day was the same rhythm, you know, just, you know, I would like tell my cousin, like, you just like cook, clean, and, you know, watch TV. So like, this was like the rhythm of life. And I couldn't like see beyond, like, how can this lead to anything? Like, what's the meaning of my life? What's why I'm here and everything. And then I saw meanwhile, my brother, they would wake up for go to school. They were like they were learning English to take the IELTS exam to go to Europe and all of that. So, and you know, I didn't have that. And then that time, you know, my grandfather was a huge influence on me, even though he was not alive, but he had like so many saying that like that was still alive in our houses. And it was, you know, if you know English, it's like opening a window to the world. And I just felt like the world around me was like dark and chaotic, you know, at that time. There was was a lot of political turmoil. There was, the Taliban were like always, there was like target killing, there was suicide bombing exploding, and around the world too, there was so much happening. And so that's when I was like, I will start doing it. Like, at least that's a path. And in over 2 years initially, like I would watch for hours and hours BBC or CNN, and I would understand a word or two, but that was enough to just to keep going. And then in 2016, my brother was going to Pakistan for a medical reason, and I asked him, just bring me anything that's in English. So I'm watching all the time was news, and already there's war around me where I was living, and then there was war in on TV. And so, among other things, he brought me Time magazine. And as I was flipping through the pages, I come across Sal Khan, a Khan Academy. And immediately I felt like this is what I wanted. It's about learning anything, any like math, science, anything. And so I immediately looked up on my laptop. But when I looked up, it said, okay, there's the first advertisement of algebra, the beauty of algebra. And I overheard conversation from my brothers and male cousins, and how they would talk about math and how hard it was, and how like, one equation, it would take pages and pages to solve it. And in the end, you can just like one line of answer. And it was just so baffling to me. It's like, how can that be? And so, but I felt like, oh, this might not be for me because it's too hard. I don't know, like, I know just the word algebra. I don't know what that means, what it is. And so, I felt disappointed because I was like, this might be too hard. But then after to a few days, like curiosity took the better of me, and I asked a younger brother, I was like, what comes after addition and subtraction? Because that's all I remembered knowing when I was in school. And he was like telling me, oh, it's fraction. And so I Googled, not Google, like I on Khan Academy, I searched, and there was fraction. And well, I have to go back to learn my addition subtraction more properly, but I start but just that's where I started. And I was just obsessed. I would like even when I was not doing math, I was thinking about math and like waking up, sleeping, and so yeah, that's how it started.
And in the book, we also write about just the incredible obstacles that Sola had to overcome to access that knowledge, even on the internet. So, I grew up in the US and I used Khan Academy, but of course, Sola's experience was so different. She had to use this extremely slow dial-up internet connection in the middle of the night because during the day she was required to cook and clean as a member of her family and as a daughter and a girl in her family. And even after she spent years going from not speaking English and not knowing how to add and subtract to being at this collegiate level, she still had to find a way out of the country. And that proved really to be one of the greatest obstacles, because she had self-educated herself. There was no way for her to prove her education if she wanted to apply to colleges or try and get a visa. And so first she tried to go to the local Ministry of Education, to get some sort of certification, but the officials there wouldn't even look her in the eyes because she was a woman, let alone give her the proper paperwork. And then she tried to take the GED, but that exam wasn't offered anywhere in Afghanistan or anywhere in neighboring countries. And so the SAT, the exam that so many of us here in the US take for college, really became her only chance at a way out. And so in the book, we write about how the SAT was only offered in Pakistan. And so Sola had to cross one of the most dangerous borders in the world in order to get into Pakistan, a border where people are often beaten with electric cables, where men and women are separated, where you need to take multiple vehicles just to get across. And then she managed to get the last testing slot in Karachi, Pakistan, to take the SAT. And that was just the first step, on her journey to get out.
Were your parents supportive of you learning online, or this was it in secret?
No, it can't be secret for them because without their support, I would never be able to do that because you still have to like internet, you have to get internet. There's so many, even you're learning from home, you still need a lot of things. And so, yeah, my younger brother, especially, and my mother, for example, this was like a safe space. So that,
Yeah,
make it
but you
easier
know.
for them to support here.
What would have happened if somebody had found out?
Well,
I
other
mean,
girls and women at the time were really being targeted, right?
yeah, I mean, when I was going to school, there was another girl with us, and she like before 3 days, they not sorry, not 3 days, but just for a few days, there was someone following her. And then we did not know, but she had to stop, and then we didn't see her again. So yeah, I mean, I think what's important is, like, when Taliban were ousted in 2001, and then they start making like this very strong comeback in 2005. And now that I read history, really, they created a education ministry, which really was about disrupting education, about like disrupting girls' education, of like targeting teachers who were teaching female students, schools, parent, like father, and like girls. So I think there was like this united effort to really, like, yeah, disrupt girls' education back then.
I remember being nervous when I sat and took the SAT, but you have to cross one of the most dangerous borders in the world. You have to, I can't even imagine the steps that it actually took to get there. You get the last seat, you sit down, and you're like, oh my goodness, I am freaking out right now. Or were you just like, okay, I'm gonna nail this?
No, I think for me it really was, I never thought I will become to that point that, like, here I'm sitting, here I'm taking the test, and this is like this next step of, like that world that I wanted to live in will become a reality. And so even though like each step was this in the dark that I was taking in the dark, I did not know what will be at the end of it. But I was just like, keep taking those steps, because I was like, if I give up on any of, I knew it's not going to be easy. I knew that from the beginning. I knew it's not going to be easy, but that became the purpose and the meaning of my life. And it's just like what shaped me, like this, like the determination, really, just to wake up every morning and do it. So I think that, and I was like, if I give up on this, what I will be able to stand up for? So yeah, like, I still can't understand the mindset of myself at that time, because, now I think, oh, I think about the hardness or this and that. But then I was just like, okay, I'm gonna run through this. Even if I fall, okay, I fall. So.
Yeah, I think it's obviously amazing. You mentioned when you were younger, 14 or so, or 15 or 16, and you're making the decision to start doing this, and you're like, "Oh, is this for me?" And then at each step, it became your life's purpose, and moving into the darkness and each step into the unknown. And we can all have experienced how scary that is, but yours on a different level. And we all struggle with self-doubt and uncertainty, and then we can be lazy or we can procrastinate on things. How do you do that now? You're living in the United States. Do you still?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time, yes, I do feel there are times like, oh, like there, of course, I think that the self-doubt comes, am I doing the right thing, or will I be able to do this thing? But a lot of the time, actually, I go back to my that self who would, like, I would go to my brother's library and I would pick up a book, and like in the first days when I start learning English, and I would, like, this one book that I remember, and I just, like, looking at it, and like I could only understand like the ABC of, like, just like the written, and this whole thing I understood nothing. And like in that time, I thought, I was like, will there be one day that I will be able to understand this thing? So I think going from that to not knowing anything and yet still like keep doing it, I'm able, so I'm like, okay, if I can come from that, it's not that I always feel like, oh, I will succeed in what I was like, okay, I will just do the part of today, and see what happens. So that's how I see.
Appreciate that. So when y'all decided to write this book, how was that process? Like the actual writing process and sharing ideas?
Yeah, I think we were very fortunate in that we started out on this book project and we didn't even know each other. We were introduced by a mutual friend. But really, Sola was telling me the stories of her entire life, and that's not something that can happen in a vacuum. And so I also told her about my life, and we really were fortunate to develop this incredibly close friendship as a result of that. And I think also, we started writing the book in 2020. And so we thought this would be really Sola's story, and it would be a difficult story to tell, but also one that ended on a very inspiring note. And of course, it is an incredibly inspiring story, but it has a new tenor after what's happened in the country in 2021. The fact that there are now the most millions of girls and women who are experiencing restrictions. And I think something that was important to us was to highlight the idea that, so many journalistic perspectives of Afghan women really erase their identity, paint them as victims, and we are so rarely given the opportunity to see inside, through that burqa and understand what are the actual lives of women and girls in Afghanistan like, what are their hopes and dreams, but also what do they do for fun, what kind of music do they listen to, what's the relationship between a generation of daughters now who is fighting for freedom every day and a generation of mothers who's known what that freedom can feel like but fears for their daughters, in this new government and this new time. These are the questions that were really important for us to explore in the book, and I think it was our closeness, our friendship, and also our similar cultural backgrounds that throughout the writing process really allowed us to express that in Defiant Dreams.
I love it. I'm sure it's been really, really well received. What is next for both of you?
Well, yeah, I'm currently working on a novel which is set in Afghanistan, and it really explore. It's an epic novel, and for example, in 2001, this new Afghanistan that was created, there was this two generations. In some sense, this was the story of Afghanistan. There were people who got globally connected, educated, like me, my brother, and many, many like that. But then there were also generation who become radicalized and who were the people who were on the streets, the suicide bombers, the attacker on the school, the threat, the people who were threatening, who were going to go to school, and how the dynamics of those two generation has were shaping and reshaping Afghanistan. And it's like at the end of it, who wins? It's this generation wins. And it's also about going back to history, because one thing I learn in life is that, deep crisis has long memories. Our present is not just randomly it emerges. It really goes, it's been shaped by the past. So really kind of understanding Afghanistan, like in the context of the whole world politics, and also in the history of not just from 2001, but going back to even the 1950s and see how it has been shaped. So that's one thing I'm working on.
I love it.
And I would say Sola and I are also in this next phase of the book, really thinking about continuing to advocate for awareness around this issue. So it's Women's History Month right now, and we're working on campaigns to highlight the stories of Afghan women, but also build curriculum that teachers can use in their classrooms to really educate young people in the United States about what's happening. So that's always top of mind for us. And then for me, I'm a junior at Stanford, so finishing my education. I was just saying it's finals week right now, so working through that. But I'm also starting a thesis that's really exploring questions that came up for me in the process of writing this book, which is how do governments use the repression of women in order to consolidate state control? And why is it that there are so many dictatorships in the world that oppress women and girls so that they can obtain power? And how does that repression end up coercing men and transforming societies? I think that's a really fundamental question, and it searching for answers could illuminate a lot about what's happened in Afghanistan, what's happening in Afghanistan, but also what's happening in the region, and the world.
I love it. Well, Sola and Milena, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you and where can they get their copy of Defiant Dreams?
Thank you for having us. People can buy Defiant Dreams on Amazon or anywhere books are sold, or go to defiantdreams.com. And for me personally, I'm at Milena Gapur on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, also we have started this campaign called hashtag My Defiant Dream, and it is about a person who can post his or his defiant her defiant dream, but also what's the defiant dreams for Afghanistan and for the girls in Afghanistan and how they can support it. Because one thing that when you talk to Afghan women and girls in Afghanistan, they will tell you just don't look away from our story, just don't normalize what's happening there. So something, to a hash the tweeting or like on Instagram posting, I think that will also help.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Sola and Milena your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Get your copy of Defiant Dreams wherever you buy your books, and certainly Amazon. You can go to defiantdreams.com to check out a little bit more about it. Find Milena on Instagram and Twitter. I'll link those in the notes and use the hashtag MyDefiantDream and start building on the conversation. Thanks, kids. So long, Lena.
Thank you.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.